The Path by Malcolm Mackay. Narrated by Anthony Wren. Part 1. Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. Around 80 pilgrims had gathered that night in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in the French Pyrenees in late September to begin their Camino. That figure was low. In the height of summer, there would have been hundreds. In addition to these, there would have been many who started from Le Puy or Lyon in France. Others would have begun in Paris, Geneva, or any number of European cities, towns, or villages where a man or a woman felt compelled to heave a pack onto their back and take to the path. Most of these trails converged on Saint-Jean, the last French town before the 800-kilometer walk across northern Spain to Santiago de Compostela. At the beginning of August, Werner Schmidt had walked out of his home in Vienna. 3 weeks after that, Fabien Laurent had slung his miniature guitar on his back, closed his front door behind him in Nancy, and headed south to the Pyrenees, and he intended to walk back again. Others had flown in to Biarritz, Bilbao, or Pamplona, and taken the train to Saint-Jean. Rhoda and Dina Dunn had boarded a plane from Toronto. Paul Kramer and Harry Hook had started out from Minnesota, and Ingrid Sorensen had taken a flight from Copenhagen via London. They were all nervous, exhilarated, and scared that they didn't have what it takes to get them over the plains, the valleys, the rolling hills, and the two mountain ranges they would have to cross to reach the great city and its ancient cathedral containing the last remains of the apostle, James. Not that they were all there for religious reasons. Every one of them had their own thoughts, worries about the future, and questions to ask. Peter Donald had taken a flight from Stansted to Biarritz. Frankly, as he'd told anyone who'd asked, he hardly knew why he was there. The most obvious reason was that his brother had told him to go. That in itself was irritating enough, but he had to admit he needed time to think, or maybe not to think. Either way, to allow the decision as to what to do next with his life to surface and become known to him. He had to face it sometime. The future was blank. A full life, or what had seemed like a full life, although he had doubts about that too, had come to a full stop. Now what? He shifted uncomfortably in his seat. He was tall and his body cramped more easily and frequently than it used to. The idea that his discomfort may have been a reflection of his state of mind never occurred to him. At least, not then. He was a man unused to such considerations. The world for him was what he saw in front of him, a series of practical propositions, problems and their solutions. The unobvious, unclear or unanswerable were left as just that. Those who knew him thought him charming, a little vain, with interested eyes and an easy smile. They weren't deceived. These qualities were as profoundly part of him as were the unwanted thoughts, sudden insights and inexplicable feelings that would rise and be concealed again, as much from himself as from those who knew him. He looked down through the window as the plane banked over the Atlantic coast of France and slowly began its descent into Biarritz. He remembered a camping holiday he'd had with his wife and son on the Isle du Roy, not too far to the south of where he was now. That was 8 years ago. He'd had a 4-week leave plus 2 weeks compassionate as his father had died. Within days of the funeral, they'd gone on holiday. Gemma had said, "Don't you want some time?" What for? Grieve? What was the point? Anyway, after his 4 months away in Basra, Sam was showing signs of needing him. Not that the holiday had done much for that. All that Peter could remember was the kind of sulk that only a 14-year-old could deliver. It went on for days. He felt later that it was the beginning of his son's rejection of him, the awful and unconscious revenge of a teenager. He turned in his seat again. No, thank you. He didn't want to think about that now. Or his father. Although he was irritated to discover that as these thoughts came, so did a tightening of his stomach and a subtle, ridiculous anxiety, as though he didn't know what he was doing, for Christ's sake. He pushed his blonde hair back from his forehead and sat straighter. It was done. They were divorced. The army was behind him. Sam was...